So we continue on this theme of inquiry and commitment, and I've been taking that theme of commitment to training in particular, and something that I came across yesterday and remembered as a set of dhammas when I was looking up at the things around kusala. That there's a set of dhammas called the upanyata dhammas, and they're what are called the two virtues realized or ascertained by the Buddha himself. And the first one is asandutita kusalesu dhammesu, which means a non-satisfaction with kusala dhammas or moral states or good achievements or that sense of that he wasn't satisfied or content to just settle on just that which was good or that which is he had achieved or things that were you know, even say wholesome, but that he was really looking for something higher than that. And then the second one, which ties into this, the whole theme of the these readings, is perseverance in exertion, unfaltering effort, putting forth of that willingness to put forth energy into the practice, sort of the non falling back in diligence. So another one that is translated into time, sort of effort which is focused on progress and development rather than and not retreating. The next reading is from the Anguttara 5, Sutta number 140. Along that same theme, a commitment to training. Endowed with five qualities, a king's elephant is worthy of a king, is a king's asset. Counts as a very limb of his king. Which five? There is the case where a king's elephant is a listener, a destroyer, a protector, an endurer, and a goer. And how is a king's elephant a listener? There is the case where, whenever the tamer of tameable elephants gives him a task, then, regardless of whether he has or hasn't done it before, he pays attention, applies his whole mind, and lends ear. This is how a king's elephant is a listener. And how is a king's elephant a destroyer? There is the case where a king's elephant, having gone into battle, destroys an elephant together with its rider, destroys a horse together with its rider, destroys a chariot together with its driver, destroys a foot soldier. This is how a king's elephant is a destroyer. And how is a king's elephant a protector? There is the case where a king's elephant, having gone into battle, protects his forequarters, protects his hindquarters, protects his forefeet, protects his hind feet, protects his head, protects his ears, protects his tusks, protects his trunk, protects his tail, protects his rider. This is how a king's elephant is a protector. And how is a king's elephant an endurer? There is a case where a king's elephant, having gone into battle, endures blows from spears, swords, arrows, and axes. He endures the resounding din of drums, cymbals, conches, and tom-toms. This is how a king's elephant is an endurer. And how is a king's elephant a goer? There is the case where, in whichever direction the tamer of tameable elephants sends him, regardless of whether he has or hasn't gone there before, a king's elephant goes there right away. This is how a king's elephant is a goer. Endowed with these five qualities, a king's elephant is worthy of a king, is a king's asset, counts as a very limb of his king. In the same way, a monk endowed with five qualities is deserving of gifts, deserving of hospitality, deserving of offerings, deserving of respect, an unexcelled field of merit for the world. Which five? There is the case where a monk is a listener, a destroyer, a protector, an endurer, and a goer. And how is a monk a listener? There is the case where, when the Dhamma and Vinaya declared by the Tathagata is being taught, a monk pays attention, applies his whole mind, and lends ear to the Dhamma. This is how a monk is a listener. And how is a monk a destroyer? There is the case where a monk doesn't tolerate an arisen thought of sensuality. He abandons it, destroys it, dispels it, and wipes it out of existence. He doesn't tolerate an arisen thought of ill will, an arisen thought of cruelty. He doesn't tolerate arisen, evil, unskillful mental qualities. He abandons them, destroys them, dispels them, and wipes them out of existence. This is how a monk is a destroyer. And how is a monk a protector? There is the case where a monk, on seeing a form with the eye, doesn't grasp at any theme or particulars by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the eye, evil, unskillful qualities, such as greed or distress, might assail him. He practices with restraint. He guards the faculty of the eye. He achieves restraint with regard to the faculty of the eye. On hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling an aroma with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on touching a tactile sensation with the body, on cognizing an idea with the intellect, he doesn't grasp at any theme or particulars by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the intellect, evil, unskillful qualities, such as greed or distress, might assail him. He practices with restraint. He guards the faculty of the intellect. He achieves restraint with regard to the faculty of the intellect. This is how a monk is a protector. And how is a monk an endurer? There is the case where a monk is resilient to cold, heat, hunger, and thirst, the touch of flies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and reptiles, ill-spoken, unwelcome words, and bodily feelings that, when they arise, are painful, racking, sharp, piercing, disagreeable, displeasing, and menacing to life. This is how a monk is an endurer. And how is a monk a goer? There is the case where a monk goes right away to that direction to which he has never been before in the course of this long stretch of time. In other words, to the resolution of all fabrications, the relinquishment of all acquisitions, the ending of craving, dispassion, cessation, unbinding. This is how a monk is a goer. Endowed with these five qualities, a monk is deserving of gifts, deserving of hospitality, deserving of offerings, deserving of respect, an unexcelled field of merit for the world. So this will be the last reading in this section on commitment to training. And this sutta is from the Anguttara, chapter of the Tens, sutta number 180, sutta number 15. And it is titled, In Praise of Diligence. And the Bhikkhu Bodhi translates, the word diligence is from appamada, which is, that's one way of translating it. Heedfulness is one, carefulness is another, circumspection is another. I wonder if Jeff has translated this one. He translates it as heedfulness. Yeah, he translates it as heedfulness. Monks, among all living beings, be they footless or two-footed, with 4 feet or many feet, with form or formless, percipient, non-percipient, or neither percipient nor non-percipient, the Tathagata, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one, is reckoned the best of them all. So too, whatever wholesome states there are, they are all rooted in diligence, converge upon diligence, and diligence is reckoned the best of them all. Just as the footprints of all mobile living beings fit into the footprint of the elephant, and the elephant's footprint is reckoned the best of them all, that is, with respect to greatness of size, so too, whatever wholesome states there are, they are all rooted in diligence. Just as all the rafters of a peaked house flow towards the roof peak, slope towards the roof peak, converge upon the roof peak, and the roof peak is reckoned the best of them all. Just as of all fragrant roots, black resinous root is reckoned the best of them all. Just as of all fragrant heartwood, red sandalwood is reckoned the best of them all. Just as of all fragrant flowers, the jasmine is reckoned the best of them all. Just as all petty princes are vassals of a world ruler, and the world ruler is reckoned the best of them all. Just as the radiance of all the stars does not amount to a 16th part of the radiance of the moon, and the radiance of the moon is reckoned the best of them all. Just as in the autumn, when the sky is clear and cloudless, the sun rises above the horizon, dispelling all darkness from space as it shines and beams and radiates. That's reckoned the best of all. Just as whatever great rivers there are, the Ganges, the Yamuna, the Achiravati, the Sarabhu, the Mahi, all lead to the ocean, slope, slide, and incline to the ocean, and the ocean is reckoned the best of them all, so too, whatever wholesome states there are, they are all rooted in diligence, converge upon diligence, and diligence is reckoned the best of them all. So the next, move on to another theme, or a variation of a theme, and it's the theme of acquiring skill, and that sense of that in terms of practice and application of effort, fine-tuning of effort, reflecting on effort, that's all, I mean, it's a skill that is needed to be developed, and it has many, obviously, many factors. And the picking up that theme of acquiring skill, or leading into that theme as a prologue into acquiring skill, then is using the indriyas, the leaders in balancing the different spiritual faculties. These spiritual faculties, indriya, faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. This sutta is from Samyutta 48, sutta number 57. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Uruvela, on the bank of the river Niranjara, at the foot of the goatherd's banyan tree, just after he had become fully enlightened. Then, while the Blessed One was alone in seclusion, a reflection arose in his mind thus: these five faculties, when developed and cultivated, have the deathless as their ground, the deathless as their destination, the deathless as their final goal. What five? The faculty of faith, the faculty of energy, the faculty of mindfulness, the faculty of concentration, the faculty of wisdom. These five faculties, when developed and cultivated, have the deathless as their ground, the deathless as their destination, the deathless as their final goal. Then Brahma Sahampati, having known with his own mind the reflection in the Blessed One's mind, just as quickly as a strong man might extend his drawn-in arm, or draw in his extended arm, disappeared from the Brahma world and reappeared before the Blessed One. He arranged his upper robe over one shoulder, extended his joined hands in reverential salutation towards the Blessed One, and said to him, "So it is, Blessed One, so it is, Fortunate One. Venerable Sir, the five faculties have the deathless as their destination, the destination as their final goal. Once in the past, Venerable Sir, I lived the holy life under the perfectly enlightened one, Kassapa. There they knew me as the Bhikkhu Sahaka. By having developed and cultivated these same five faculties, Venerable Sir, I eliminated desire for sensual pleasures, and thus, with the breakup of the body after death, I was reborn in a good destination in the Brahma world. There they know me as Brahma Sahampati. So it is, Blessed One, so it is, Fortunate One. I know this, I see this, how these five faculties, when developed and cultivated, have the deathless as their ground, the deathless as their destination, the deathless as their final goal." Oops. That isn't how I was supposed to read it. I have them numbered. That was supposed to be my second reading. Got it turned around here. I forgot to mark it clearly. Again, acquiring skill skill in exertion and its proper directing, particularly that theme of again the whole theme of all these readings as an underlying basis of around effort and energy. These four factors of exertion, padana, for complete purity, have been fully proclaimed by the Blessed One. This is Anguttara 4:194. For the purification of beings, for the passing over of grief and distress, for the ending of sorrow and lamentation, for accomplishing the goal, for the realization of Nibbana. What for? Exertion for purity of morality, of mind, of view, and of release. And what is the factor of exertion for purity in terms of morality? In this case, a bhikkhu is virtuous. He undertakes the practice and practices the precepts. The complete purity of morality is this: I will perfect moral purity wherever it is incomplete, and if it is complete, I will augment it with wisdom. The wish to do, the effort, striving, endeavor, energy, mindfulness, and clear comprehension applied to this theme is called the factor of exertion for the complete purity of morality. And what is the factor of exertion for purity in terms of mind? In this case, a bhikkhu, not attaching to sense desire and evil states, enters on the first jhana, which is accompanied by directed thought and evaluation, and has rapture and ease that comes from non-attachment, and he abides in that state. Then by the calming down of the directed thought and evaluation, attains and abides in the second jhana. By the fading of rapture, attains and abides in the third jhana. Then by relinquishing ease and discomfort, attains and abides in the fourth jhana. The complete purity of mind is this: I will perfect purity of mind wherever it is incomplete, and if it is complete, I will augment it with wisdom. The wish to do, the effort, striving, endeavor, energy, mindfulness, and clear comprehension applied to this theme is called the factor of exertion for the complete purity of mind. And what is the factor of exertion for purity in terms of view? In this case, a bhikkhu comes to understand as it actually is. This is dukkha. This is the origin of dukkha. This is the stopping of dukkha. This is the path that leads to the stopping of dukkha. The complete purity of view is this: I will perfect purity of view wherever it is incomplete, and if it is complete, I will augment it with wisdom. The wish to do, the effort, striving, endeavor, energy, mindfulness, and clear comprehension applied to this theme is called the factor of exertion for the complete purity of view. And what is the factor of exertion for purity in terms of release? In this case, the noble disciple who possesses the factor of exertion for the complete purity of morality, of mind, of view, cleanses his heart from defilements and releases his heart through the conditions that release. So doing, he attains perfect release. The complete purity of release is thus: I will perfect purity of release wherever it is incomplete, and if it is complete, I will augment it with wisdom. The wish to do, the effort, striving, endeavor, energy, mindfulness, and clear comprehension applied to this theme is called the factor of exertion for the complete purity of release. Anguttara 4 is 194. Okay, and then the lead into the indriyas, aiming to the deathless, and this is so taking the indriyas and doing a bit of a analysis on them. Because there are these five faculties. What five? The faculty of faith, the faculty of energy, the faculty of mindfulness, the faculty of concentration, the faculty of wisdom. And what, bhikkhus, is the faculty of faith? Here, bhikkhus, the noble disciple, is a person of faith, one who places faith in the enlightenment of the Tathagata thus. The Blessed One is an Arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One. And what, bhikkhus, is the faculty of energy? Here, bhikkhus, the noble disciple dwells with energy aroused for the abandoning of unwholesome states and the acquisition of wholesome states. He is strong, firm in exertion, not shirking the responsibility of cultivating wholesome states. This is called the faculty of energy. And what, bhikkhus, is the faculty of mindfulness? Here, bhikkhus, the noble disciple is mindful, possessing supreme mindfulness and discretion, one who remembers and recollects what was done and said long ago. This is called the faculty of mindfulness. And what, bhikkhus, is the faculty of concentration? Here, bhikkhus, the noble disciple gains concentration, gains one-pointedness of mind, having made release the object. This is called the faculty of concentration. And what, bhikkhus, is the faculty of wisdom? Here, bhikkhus, the noble disciple is wise, possesses wisdom directed to arising and passing away, which is noble and penetrative, leading to the complete destruction of suffering. This is called the faculty of wisdom. These bhikkhus are the five faculties. Okay, the next sutta is Samyutta 48, sutta number 50, and this is continuing the theme of the faculties as these faculties supporting each other. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Angans, where there was a town of the Angans named Apana. There the Blessed One addressed the Venerable Sariputta thus, Sariputta, does the noble disciple, who is completely dedicated to the Tathagata and has full confidence in him, entertain any perplexity or doubt about the Tathagata or the Tathagata's teaching? Venerable Sir, the noble disciple who is completely dedicated to the Tathagata and has full confidence in him does not entertain any perplexity or doubt about the Tathagata or the Tathagata's teaching. It is indeed to be expected, Venerable Sir, that a noble disciple who has faith will dwell with energy aroused for the abandoning of unwholesome states and the acquisition of wholesome states, that he will be strong, firm in exertion, not shirking the responsibility of cultivating wholesome states. That energy of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of energy. It is indeed to be expected, Venerable Sir, that a noble disciple who has faith and whose energy is aroused will be mindful, possessing supreme mindfulness and discretion, one who remembers and recollects what was done and said long ago. That mindfulness of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of mindfulness. It is indeed to be expected, Venerable Sir, that a noble disciple who has faith, whose energy is aroused, and whose mindfulness is established, will gain concentration, will gain one-pointedness of mind, having made release the object. That concentration of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of concentration. It is indeed to be expected, Venerable Sir, that a noble disciple who has faith, whose energy is aroused, whose mindfulness is established, and whose mind is concentrated, will understand thus. This samsara is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not discerned of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. But the remainderless fading away and cessation of ignorance, the mass of darkness. This is the peaceful state. This is the sublime state, that is, the stilling of all formations, the relinquishment of all acquisitions, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. That wisdom of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of wisdom. And, Venerable Sir, when he has again and again strived in such a way, again and again recollected in such a way, again and again concentrated his mind in such a way, again and again understood with wisdom in such a way, that noble disciple gains complete faith thus. As to these things that previously I had only heard about, now I dwell, having contacted them with the body and having pierced them through wisdom, I see. That faith of his, Venerable Sir, is his faculty of faith. Good, Sariputta. Sariputta, the noble disciple who is completely dedicated to the Tathagata, has full confidence in him and does not entertain any perplexity or doubt about the Tathagata or the Tathagata's teaching. There's a sutta prior to that, Sutta 44, where the Buddha is in Savatthi at the Eastern Gatehouse and addresses Sariputta. Sariputta, do you have faith that the faculty of faith, when developed and cultivated, has the deathless as its ground, the deathless as its destination, the deathless as its final goal, and through all the rest of the faculties, the faculty of wisdom, when developed and cultivated, has the deathless as its ground, the deathless as its destination, the deathless as its final goal. And Sariputta answered, Venerable Sir, I do not go by faith in the Blessed One about this. And he said that the faculty of faith and so on, when developed and cultivated, have the deathless as their final goal. Those by whom this has not been known, seen, understood, realized, and contacted by wisdom, they would have to go by faith in others about this. But those by whom this has been known, seen, understood, realized, and contacted by wisdom, they would be without perplexity or doubt about this. Said, I am one, Venerable Sir, by whom this has been known, seen, understood, realized, and contacted with wisdom. I am without perplexity or doubt about this, that the faculty of faith and so on. So, Lumpa Cha would oftentimes use this, that sutta. But, because he went, Lumpa would oftentimes be prodding people to be going beyond the. That's actually one of the epithets of an arahant is an arahant is an asatta, one without faith. It means not that they don't have any faith. It means that they don't need to have faith because they clearly see things, penetrate it. Vosangaramana Samadhi. Vosanga. That's a. Vosanga is the word. So release. Which is similar to Patinisika. Release, relinquishment. See, commentarily, that's where that release is also, say, compared or equated with Nibbana as well. So taking Nibbana as the object. Which is, it's oftentimes I talk about that, using that quality as a way to direct attention when one's sitting. Okay, release. I'm using that as an object, or taking the end of suffering or the end of greed, hatred, and delusion as the object of one point in one's mind, which is an interesting exercise.
Yeah.
Okay, this next sutta is Anguttara 4, sutta number 162, and it is called the Four Modes of Progress. So in terms of acquiring skill, then there are different ways of progress. There are, O monks, these four modes of progress. What four? The mode of progress that is painful with sluggish direct knowledge. The mode of progress that is painful with quick direct knowledge. The mode of progress that is pleasant with sluggish direct knowledge. And the mode of progress that is pleasant with quick direct knowledge. And what is the mode of progress that is painful with sluggish direct knowledge? Here, monks, someone is by nature strongly disposed to lust, hatred, and delusion, and he often experiences pain and grief born of lust, hatred, and delusion. These five faculties appear in him to be tender, the faculties of faith energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And because of their tenderness, he sluggishly attains the immediacy condition for the destruction of the taints. This is called the mode of progress that is painful with sluggish direct knowledge. And what is the mode of progress that is painful with quick direct knowledge? Here, monks, someone is by nature strongly disposed to lust, hatred, and delusion, and he often experiences pain and grief born of lust, hatred, and delusion. These five faculties appear in him to be prominent, the faculties of faith, so on, of wisdom, and because of their prominence, he quickly attains the immediacy condition for the destruction of the taints. This is called the mode of progress that is painful with quick direct knowledge. And what is the mode of progress that is pleasant with sluggish direct knowledge? Here, monks, someone is not by nature strongly disposed to lust, hatred, and delusion, and he does not often experience pain and grief born of lust, hatred, and delusion. These five faculties appear in him to be tender, the faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And because of their tenderness, he sluggishly attains the immediacy condition for the destruction of the taints. This is called the mode of progress that is pleasant with sluggish direct knowledge. And what is the mode of progress that is pleasant with quick direct knowledge? Here, monk, someone is not by nature strongly disposed to lust, hatred, and delusion, and he does not often experience pain and grief born of lust, hatred, and delusion. These five faculties appear in him to be prominent, the faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And because of their prominence, he quickly attains the immediacy condition for the destruction of the taints. This is called the mode of progress that is pleasant with quick direct knowledge. These, monks, are the four modes of progress. So the next section or selection is what sort of looking at the terrain, looking at the ground of what needs to be done in order to acquire skill and the work that needs to be done, and sort of doing the gardening on it. So this is on the mind, which is the ground, is the terrain we have to work with. So these are from the Anguttara ones, from kind of chapters 3 and 4. No other thing do I know, O monks, that is so intractable as an undeveloped mind. An undeveloped mind is truly intractable. No other thing do I know, O monks, that is so tractable as a developed mind. A developed mind is truly tractable. No other thing do I know, O monks, that brings so much suffering as an undeveloped mind, as an undeveloped and uncultivated mind. An undeveloped and uncultivated mind truly brings suffering. No other thing do I know, O monks, that brings so much happiness as a developed and cultivated mind. A developed and cultivated mind truly brings happiness. No other thing do I know, O monks, that brings so much harm as a mind that is untamed, unguarded, unprotected, and uncontrolled. Such a mind truly brings much harm. No other thing do I know, O monks, that brings so much benefit as a mind that is tamed, guarded, protected, and controlled. Such a mind truly brings great benefit. This is a sutta that I actually referred to last night. Chapter 2's, Anguttara chapter 2's, the second section, sutta number 9. Abandon evil, O monks. One can abandon evil, monks. If it were impossible to abandon evil, I would not ask you to do so. But as it can be done, therefore I say, abandon evil. If this abandoning of evil would bring harm and suffering, I would not ask you to abandon it. But as the abandoning of evil brings well-being and happiness, therefore I say, abandon evil. Cultivate the good, O monks. One can cultivate the good, monks. If it were impossible to cultivate the good, I would not ask you to do so. But as it can be done, therefore I say, cultivate the good. If this cultivation of the good would bring harm and suffering, I would not ask you to cultivate it. But as the cultivation of the good brings well-being and happiness, therefore I say, cultivate the good. I'll leave it there. Any questions?